Riding into Walter Calloway's little headquarters from its backside, Huey couldn't see that much had changed. The barn was a box and strip building, not 1 foot larger than it had to be to house his saddles and harness, some sacked stock salt, scooped from the edge of the big Juan Cordona Lake, and the assortment of livestock medicines and liniments given off a smell that reached beyond the door and struck a man squarely in both nostrils before he touched the latch. On one side stood a lean-to roof with a trough and a hay rack where the work stock could be fed dry during infrequent rainy weather. On the other side stood another rude lean-to, walled only on the north, sheltering a forge and an anvil where Walter and the boys could do whatever blacksmithing they found necessary. Most horses and mules in this country went unshod. The hoofs were simply kept trimmed so they wouldn't break or split and cause lameness. Next to the barn stood a wooden windmill tower, topped by a 12-foot eclipse wheel, turning in the warm afternoon breeze. Its sucker rod clanked with a steady rhythm in the pipe. Its water flowed first into a big wooden barrel, the mouth of the pipe set high enough that a bucket could be placed under it to fill with clean drinking and cooking and washing water for the house. From the barrel, the water passed through a short pipe into another frame building, even smaller than the barn. Huey looked at his brother.
Well, there's something new. You built Eve a milk house?
Walter proudly held the wooden door open for Huey. Huey saw that the water from the pipe flowed into a slanted open concrete trough into which Eve had set several cloth-covered milk and cream jars to keep their contents from souring too soon. The water, fresh from the ground, was always cool.
We built the trough with just enough slope to keep the fresh water running through and out the far end.
Huey saw, scratched into the cement before it had hardened, Cotton Tommy 05.
Yeah, it was Cotton laid it all out.
The water eddied into another pipe, leading to a big open surface tank. There it was available to the livestock after the people finished with it. No water reached the family house except that which somebody carried in a bucket. The windmill supplied all the water for man and beast. Without it, or another of its kind, life could not long be sustained here. Nature had not provided it at the surface, free for the taking. It had to be worked for. That was the reason this part of Texas had been slow in settling up, the last to be claimed other than by the free-sprawling cattlemen such as C.C. Tarpley. The real enemy here had not been Indians or the thin scattering of outlaws. It had been the lack of water. The windmill accomplished more for settlement than all the cavalry and all the sheriffs since the Civil War. Huey looked up at the family's meat supply, beef wrapped in a protective tarp to keep the flies off. It was hanging from a steel hook attached to the end of a lever. Walter reached over to a peg and untied a short length of rope. Running up through a pulley, it freed the lever so that the quarter of beef was lowered by its own weight to about shoulder level. Walter pulled on the rope and the lever moved up, raising the meat back almost to the ceiling.
Cotton's idea, too. He designed it to make more working room and still keep things easy for his mother.
Moving out, Huey stepped to the side of the barn and ran a thumbnail along a plank, testing the peeling paint. He helped Walter put this barn up. He hated to see it looking this way.
Yeah, it needs painting.
First things first. We've had other things more in need.
Well, I'll paint it for you if you'll fetch some red paint first time you go to town.
Red paint was the cheapest. Its color was dark enough that even a cheap grade would cover.
Paint don't come cheap. Barn won't fall down if it goes another year without new paint. He's gone 2 years without a new dress.
Huey frowned and said nothing. The whole barn wouldn't take but a dollar's worth, maybe two. Many a time he'd put a dollar's worth of whiskey down his throat between two breaths and never begrudged the money. A dollar had never meant much to him, beyond whatever pleasure it might bring to him or to somebody else whose company he enjoyed. Want of money was a thing he never experienced and never understood. He had been broke often, but he had never been poor. He'd never had a wife to support, of course, or two sons, or a homestead to prove up. He guessed to Walter a dollar bill must look as big as a saddle blanket, and as scarce as July rain. Walter had added no new corrals that Huey could see. Four sections of land wouldn't carry a great many cattle, not in this part of the country. Huey helped him build all the pens he needed several years ago. They used mesquite timber, stacked horizontally between pairs of heavy posts. making a fence tight enough that a kid goat couldn't crawl through. They cut rawhide strips to tie the pairs of posts at the top instead of buying wire. They hadn't used $5 worth of bought materials. They didn't have $5 to spend. Tommy dipped a tin bucket into an oat bin. The oats, cut last May or June, and almost a year old now, had a dry and dusty smell as he spread them along the bottom of a wooden trough. The two workhorses and the mules went straight to the feed. Biscuit stood apart from the other stock, a little superior in attitude, his custom among strangers. But when he heard their teeth grinding the oats, he turned Democrat and joined them at the trough.
I wouldn't want to spoil him. He don't get this style of treatment everywhere.
He won't get enough of it here to do him any harm. You wouldn't believe, Hugh, what a bushel of oats is worth these days.
We gather up most of these down at the freighter's campground. What they spill when they feed their stock.
A freight wagon road ran nearby, a couple of hundred yards below the house. For years, freighters made a custom of camping in a grove of wild chinaberry trees and led their horse and mule teams up to the corrals to water them from Walter's tank. It was a point of pride with Walter not to charge them for it, because the Lord provided the water. The Lord had not provided the windmill, however, except in an indirect manner. The freighters recognized this fact and usually made it a point to waste some feed that the boys could gather up in a sack. From somewhere appeared a droop-eared burro, its brown hair still ragged with unshed winter growth. It pushed in beside Biscuit and shoved its nose into the oats. Biscuit, nettled by the uninvited familiarity, bared his teeth and took a nip at the burro's flank. The burro wheeled, showed his backside, and kicked Biscuit squarely in the stomach. His point made, he went back to the oats. Biscuit stood to one side, surprised and shamed. Finally, he turned back to the trough, but kept one of the work stock between him and the burro. Huey grimaced, sharing Biscuit's shame at the hands of an inferior.
He ain't met many burros. He's got a right smart to learn.
He'll learn if he stays around this one. The burro's cottons. Alvin Laudermilk gave it to him for helping him work some bronc mules.
Many ranchers used burros to teach young broncs to lead and obey the rope. They would simply tie the burro and the bronc together. The stubborn burro would go where he wanted to and make the bronc come along, whether it suited him or not. Size and weight counted for little. The burro almost always won.
Well, every boy ought to have him a dog and a burro. What do you call him?
Tommy glanced quickly at his father, then back at the animal.
Mostly just burro, or hey you. He don't answer to a name, he just answers to feed.
Huey watched the horses and mules and the burro eat, a thing that had always given him pleasure. He had heard few sounds in his life that he liked better than a strong set of teeth grinding at a bait of oats, unless it was a good rain beating upon a tin roof in a dry country that needed it. He noticed finally that Walter was waiting for him, holding the gate open. Huey walked out so Walter could shut the gate behind him.
Tommy, you can milk the cow before supper.
It's Cotton's turn.
Cotton's still out working. I let you quit early.
The argument was over. Neither Walter nor Eve stood for it from the boys. They all started walking toward the house. Huey's skin began to prickle. He never knew what kind of reception Eve would offer him on any given day. He remembered a couple he wouldn't wish on Fat Gervin.
You better go on ahead and tell her I'm here, Walter.
She'll know when she sees you. Come on.
Walter scraped his boots on the edge of the step at the kitchen door in case he'd set foot into something he hadn't noticed. Eve would notice, that was certain. Tommy grinned in anticipation of his mother's happy reaction. Huey wiped his feet with even more care than Walter and rubbed the toes of his dusty boots on the backs of his legs, not removing any dust, but moving it around. He wished he'd taken longer in Tarpley's water tank.
You're home early. Something wrong?
Nothing wrong. Everything's right.
It's still daylight. I haven't got supper fixed yet. I didn't figure on you all till good dark.
Huey imagined he could detect reproach, but he knew he was probably giving her the worst of it.
We had good reason to quit. Come on in here, Huey.
Huey pulled the kitchen screen open. He stopped just inside, letting the screen door bump against his backside as the spring pulled it shut. He held his hat in both hands and was ready to hit the screen running if need be. He shifted his weight from one foot to the other.
Howdy, Eve.
Eve Calloway was well into her 30s, no longer really young, but not yet reconciled to pass over that one-way threshold into middle age. She was at a time in her life when, with the right clothes and activated by the right mood, she could still seem girl-like, years younger than her actual age. Or if tired and irritable and taking no care for her appearance, she could look years older than she was. Huey had seen her both ways so many times he never knew which to expect. At this moment, she seemed more inclined toward the latter. She stared at him with wide eyes. Other than surprise, he could see no readily identifiable emotion in her face. He kept his back against the screen. Waiting vainly for a reaction, he finally caved.
I ain't staying long, Eve.
Walter watched his wife, waiting for her to give his brother a joyous welcome. When she didn't, he became as nervous as Huey. Walter walked to the wood box and glanced perfunctorily inside.
Low on wood. I better chop some more before supper.
No, I'll...
You stay here and visit with Eve. She's anxious to know where all you been.
Walter pushed past Huey and went out the screen door, pausing to lift a milk bucket from its rack beside the steps.
Tommy! Time to get on with the milking.
Alone, Huey and Eve stared at each other across the width of the little kitchen, neither moving.
Well, Huey?
Well, Eve?
When the tension between them became too heavy for her, she turned to the majestic iron cook stove, removed the round front lid from its place, did momentary violence to the red coals with an iron poker, then shoved in a couple of chunks of dry mesquite from the wood box. Huey suspected it was not a thing she especially needed to do. It was something to busy her hands. She kept her eyes on her work.
You just as well sit down and stop locking the door. And you'd better pitch that hat into a corner before you twist the brim plumb off it.
Huey dropped his hat on the floor and took one step sideways and hunkered down, campfire style, his back against the flower-papered wall. The paper helped keep the wind out. The box and strip siding, 1x12 planks and 1x4 strips nailed over the joints, did not seal. Eve tentatively touched her fingers against the coffee pot, testing its warmth. She pulled the hand quickly away. Huey remembered it was her habit to keep the coffee drinkably warm all day. Like most farm and ranch wives of her place and time, she'd rather have faced the devil in her nightgown than to be caught smoking a cigarette or drinking whiskey. But she drank more coffee than Walter did. She fetched a flat-bottomed gray enamel cup from a plain open-fronted cabinet nailed to the wall. She turned with a coffee pot in her hand and stopped at the sight of Huey sitting on his spurs.
You're just like every cowboy I ever saw in my life. If I had a dozen rocking chairs in the room, they'd still squat on the floor. You get up here and sit at the table and try to act like company. This is a house, not a cow camp.
Huey was quick to do what she told him. She spilled a little of the coffee in her nervousness. Instinctively, Huey rubbed his hand through it to wipe it up, then didn't know what to do with the wet hand. He dried it on his trousers, under the table and out of sight. Eve poured herself some coffee, but didn't sit at the table with him. She stared at him from her position in front of the stove. The mesquite wood was starting to crackle a little, though Huey imagined the sound might be coming from Eve herself.
Look, Eve, I got a little homesick. The boys got to weighing on my mind. I just felt like I had to see him. A day or two, that's all, and I'll be gone.
Her blue eyes reminded him of a diamond cutting glass.
You're looking thin, Huey. Haven't you eaten regular?
I'm all right. I've been batching all winter.
Batching? No wonder. There's not many men can cook fit to feed a hound dog, and you're sure not one of the few. It'll take me a month to put some flesh on you.
I don't figure to stay that long.
Her eyes lost their cutting edge. Though he knew it was unlikely, he thought he saw the beginning of a smile start pulling at the corners of her mouth. If so, she quickly got the situation under control.
You're here, Huey, so you'll stay.
Huey didn't know what to say, so he kept his mouth shut.
Where in the world did you go, Huey? Leaving like that in the middle of the night? We just got up in the morning and found you gone. The boys cried, both of them. Walter didn't know what to think.
Well, you know why I left.
You've made me live with a bad conscience. I knew you left because of what I said to you, and I couldn't tell them.
What you told me was true, every bit of it. I didn't have no part in what you and Walter was trying to do here. The only thing for me to do was leave and not come back.
He looked down at his coffee cup, lifted it part way, then set it on the table again.
I stayed away as long as I could.
She took a couple of steps toward him.
Huey Calloway, look at me.
He did. He'd been watching her ever since he'd come into the house.
You helped us get this place. You helped us build this house and a lot of what else is here. You've got a right to stay here as long as you want to.
Oh, that's not how you sounded when I left here.
I was mad.
Well, I ain't changed any. You'll be mad again if I stay long.
I know. You can be an exasperating man, Huey. I'll bet there's not three things in this whole world that we agree on, you and me. But the next time I get mad, you just go off out of my sight a while and give me a little time. You don't have to stay gone for 2 whole years.
Huey found the coffee bitter. It had been heating too long. But it was coffee, and that was the staff of life around most cow camps he ever stayed in. He looked up at her.
Well, I'll try not to make you mad at all. I'll try to keep my mouth shut.
She shook her head, a smile breaking across her face.
I wouldn't ask that much of nature. I would as soon ask the snow to come in July and the sun to rise in the west.
She leaned across the table and reached toward him. He flinched, not knowing what to expect. She took hold of his chin and turned his head a little, looking at the wound on his jaw.
You just got it from a bronc. It's a long ways from the heart.
One of those broncs will kill you someday. It's time you settled down to something steady and admitted your age.
That was what started the quarrel the last time, and most of the others he could remember. Eve was always lecturing him about settling down, about responsibility, respectability, always trying to change him. The way Huey saw it, the Lord had purposely made every person different. He couldn't understand why so many people were determined to thwart the Lord's work by making everyone the same.
I've never let a bronc kill me yet.
Yet. Let me see your hand. Your right hand?
He extended it uncertainly. She took it, turned it over, and looked at the palm, then gave his wrist a vigorous shake.
Well, it's not broken after all.
What made you think it was?
You never did write a letter. For all anybody knew, you could have been dead and buried somewhere.
At last, Huey began to relax, and he felt the birth pangs of a grin.
If I ever die, you'll know it right away. The Lord will lift a heavy weight off of your soul, and you'll know I've flown.
Fell is more like it. You hungry? Of course you're hungry. You're always hungry. Well, you'll have to put up with stew tonight. Tomorrow's Sunday. Maybe I can fill you up on chicken.
I'll be obliged for anything. You know me. There ain't much I won't eat.
That is a gospel fact.
She started to turn away from him, but stopped and looked intently at him, then leaned across the table.
Welcome home, Huey.
His jaw sagged. If he lived to be 106, he would never figure out his sister-in-law. She could change quicker than the wind. Occasionally, on a cold winter night when he was being honest with himself, Huey knew that if he had been the marrying sort, and if Walter hadn't seen Eve first, he might have married her. She was pretty then, and sweeter than a fresh-stirred batch of wild plum jelly. She still was now and again when she wasn't being overly protective of home and brood. At such times, if he didn't watch himself, his old feelings about her would rise up to confuse and discomfort him. Fortunately, he got over them the first time her eyes snapped. Eve opened one of the big warming ovens, extending forward over the cooking surface of the iron stove, taking their heat from the chimney that ran up through them. Inside, stacked on a tin plate, was leftover cornbread.
I can fix you some cornbread and sweet milk right now if you'd like.
I'll wait and eat with the rest of you. Wouldn't want to cheat Walter and the boys. They've been working.
He began to feel more at ease. He listened to the axe chopping wood and was glad Walter hadn't let him take that quick and easy way out. A fat old gray tomcat wandered into the kitchen from one of the tiny bedrooms, pausing to stretch himself in the doorway, then studied Huey with a look that came near being disdain. He ambled over and examined Huey's hat lying on the floor, smelled around Huey's boots, found nothing of particular interest, and wandered back toward the open doorway again, pausing for one long backward look, which confirmed his earlier low appraisal.
I see you've got the same independent cat.
Nothing changes around here. We just get a little older is all.
Huey looked around the little kitchen, trying to find signs of anything new since he left. Everything seemed the same. Any improvements to the homestead, the family made out on the place, not in the house they lived in. The table and chairs were plain and already old when Walter bought them. The black iron stove came out of a rancher's cow camp after the state terminated the lease and put the land up for homesteading. The pots and pans, the utensils, the cheap porcelain dishes, all remnants of a well-used set Eve brought with her into the marriage. So far as Huey could see, the only thing new was Eve's patent medicine calendar advertising a remedy for woman's complaint.
I don't know about that. Haven't seen a medicine yet that stopped a woman from complaining.
He noted one date. He'd lost track and didn't know how long ago it was, pencil marked with a small, feminine X. He wondered idly what that was for. Eve hadn't gained a pound of weight. She worked too hard to get fat, he had always thought, ignoring the fact that he had seen other country women who worked just as hard and got to weigh 200 pounds by middle age. She wore a plain cotton dress she made for herself from a large bolt of blue and white tiny checkered cloth. She bartered for the cloth years ago, trading some eggs and old boiling hens. She'd been sewing dresses off of this same bolt for 6 or 7 years, to Huey's certain knowledge. They always looked alike, differing only in age and extent of wear. Wind and sun had been unkind to Eve's complexion, though she wore a big slat bonnet to protect her face when she went outdoors. That faded bonnet, ribbed with long, thin strips of cardboard and made from the same cloth as the dress, hung from a nail near the door. Despite the sun's work on her skin, Eve's features were still small and fine as the day she and Walter married.
That Tommy's growed like a weed. I thought he was cotton when I first seen him. He looks finer than a Morgan colt.
He's a good boy.
Eve stoked the burning wood and put in another chunk of mesquite.
And I don't just say that because he's mine.
Huey looked out the window, hoping.
I can't hardly wait for Cotton to get here. How's he been?
Eve didn't answer for a minute.
Fine. Just fine.
When she turned, he saw that her lips had tightened.
Something the matter with Cotton?
Nothing, he's fine.
Huey stared at her, unsatisfied, until she shrugged and sat down across the table from him, her shoulders pinched.
I don't know. There's probably nothing wrong with Cotton. It's probably something wrong with me. I just don't understand him anymore.
She picked up her coffee cup, but she set it down again, the coffee untouched. It was probably cold anyway.
I thought all we had to do was raise the boys in a good Christian home, and they'd turn out just like us. But Cotton has gotten away from us somehow. He's different.
You trying to say he's like me?
He does have some of your ways. He's restless and all. Enough to scare me, remembering you. But he's got other ways that are his own. He's not the same as us, and not the same as you either. He's Cotton.
He been in trouble?
No, nothing like that. He works hard, never troubles anybody but us, and he doesn't intend to do even that. He did run off once for a couple of days. Talked the freighter Blue Hannigan into giving him a ride to Midland. Told him he was on an errand for us. He came back on his own. Never explained much. Just said he wanted to go and see one of those automobiles he'd read about. Said he didn't ask because he figured we'd say no.
Would you have?
Certainly. A boy has no business running off to a big city like Midland by himself. Must be 2, maybe 3,000 people living over there. No telling what kind of sinful goings-on a boy might see.
Sure is a big town, all right.
He said you told him once you'd seen an automobile in Midland.
I did?
Huey frowned again, looking for criticism, but unable to read the thought behind her eyes.
I blamed you at first, filling the boys' heads with a bunch of foolishness. That was easier than to blame myself. I likely bore down on him too hard too many times. It's a thing I do too easy. And then I don't always know how to back away. Maybe it's good you came when you did. You always had a special touch with the boys. You could always reach them in a way that I couldn't, or their daddy couldn't.
I'll talk to him.
It'd be better if you got him to talk to you. Cotton doesn't open up to us much anymore.
The wood chopping had stopped. Walter came to the door carrying an armload of dried mesquite, cut to stove-burning length. He glanced in before opening the screen, then stopped again for a moment just inside before proceeding to the wood box and dropping the wood carefully so that it lay lengthwise, not in a scrambled manner. He turned and studied his wife and Huey with a little apprehension. When he saw no quarrel between them, he began to smile.
See there, Huey? I told you she wouldn't bite.
Eve built up the fire. She pulled a pot of stew and another of beans out onto the stove's flat top to warm for supper. The heat in the kitchen became oppressive. Huey pushed the screen door open, walked down the steps, and paused to stretch the kinks out of his arms and legs. He rolled and lighted a cigarette, his first since he arrived. Looking to the barn and beyond, he saw that Tommy had turned the milk cow back into the pasture for the night. This late, she wouldn't stray far before bedding down. She'd be at the gate long before milking time in the morning, bawling plaintively for her recently born calf, kept separated from her in a small pen so it wouldn't take all the milk. The work stock had also edged away into the pasture and were cropping the green spring grass they had missed all day in the field. Biscuit followed them, but remained to one side, a little aloof, especially from the burrow. Huey heard the sound of wheels rolling over a trail and scanned the horizon. In the dusk, to the northwest, he made out the shape of a wagon. The black dog heard it too. He came out from under the house, gave Huey another tentative check, for he hadn't accepted him as belonging, then went trotting to meet the wagon, his tail busy. A country dog of any intelligence knew the sound of his own people's wagons and could usually tell when a strange one was coming. The same was true for his people's horses, the ones they rode most often. A dog was usually either wagging its tail or barking, while humans still strained their eyes trying to see who was coming. It was too small for a freight wagon.
Oh, must be Cotton.
He was the only one still out. Huey strolled slowly to the barn, timing his pace to get there when the wagon did.
All right now, let's get in there.
He found it difficult to believe that tall boy on the wagon seat was his nephew. Lord, what a difference 2 years could make.
I'll be damned.
Talking to oneself was a habit many a cowboy developed when he was alone a lot. The sound of a human voice was a reassurance of sorts, even one's own. Cotton couldn't see him at first. He was busy maneuvering the wagon under a brush arbor where it was kept for some protection from the elements. Huey glanced up at the darkening but cloudless sky and saw no reason to expect any trouble from the elements tonight. Shedding the wagon was a good habit to instill in a boy, though. It taught him responsibility. If he shirked the chore when he saw no need in it, he might find it easy to shirk when the need arose. The boy handled the two mules with firm hands, backing them carefully to put the wagon into place. They were young mules, green broncs, really, and required a lot of patience.
That's it. Bring it in easy. Come on, easy.
The wagon hubbed a post.
Damn it, stop trying to live up to your stupid mule reputation.
Cotton had to move the mules forward, then back again. They worked with much twitching of long ears, much chomping at the bits. Huey guessed they belonged to Alvin Laudermilk, and that Cotton was training them for pay or trade.
Let's get it back now. Easy. There you go. That's it.
He watched with satisfaction as the wagon at last rolled into its proper place. Cotton had a special aptitude for anything done with the hands, whether the tool be a wrench or a pair of leather reins. From the age of 7 or 8, he could take a little lumber, a bucket of nails, a saw and hammer, and build anything he set his mind to. Huey wouldn't have admitted it to the Lord Jesus, should he come to ask, but Cotton was his favorite of the two boys by just a thin edge. Perhaps it was natural, Cotton being the firstborn, the lone recipient of a bachelor uncle's adoration and hopes for 2 full years before Tommy showed up. By virtue of his extra age, Cotton stepped up first to try almost everything. The first to ride a horse, the first to pick up a rope, the first to fall off of the barn. By the time Tommy came along to do the same things, the new was gone. The boys had no grandparents to spoil them, so Uncle Huey served that function. Riding in at intervals, doing his mischief, telling them stories that would never have stood the scrutiny of a court, playing hell with family discipline, he would then ride cheerfully away to greener pastures without having to assume any responsibility for the chaos he wrought. Huey claimed all the privileges of a grandparent, but was saddled with only half the age.
Howdy, Cotton.
He expected Cotton to come running with open arms, as Tommy had done, and he braced himself for the jolt. He saw the surprise, the quick flash of an unguarded smile, but suddenly, unaccountably, the smile was gone. Cotton stood by the front wheel, holding the lines uncertainly. His face was sober and reserved.
I see you finally got home.
Huey had always found it easy to talk to the boys. It had always seemed to him that their thoughts and his ran along the same trail, possibly because they hadn't had time to grow up and he hadn't had the inclination. He stared nonplussed at his nephew and couldn't bring up an intelligent word to say.
I'm home.
Huey waited in vain for Cotton to come to him. Always before, Cotton came running, joyously, unrestrained, with laughter and shouting and love. Now it was Huey, finally, who went to Cotton. He was unexpectedly nervous, as ill at ease as he had been with Eve. He wanted to put his arms around Cotton and hug him, as in other times. He held back, watching for some sign in the boy's eyes. All he got was that stare. Not hostile, but not warm. Huey awkwardly thrust out his hand, as he might do in meeting a stranger.
It's good to see you, Button.
Cotton took his hand. His grip was strong and hard, but it was also polite and somehow formal.
I'd better unharness the mules, Uncle Huey.
Huey watched him in uncertain silence, wishing to help, but not sure his help was wanted. He leaned his back against the wagon wheel. For a moment or two, he felt cold, like in that lonesome shack high up in the snows of the Sangre de Cristos. Walter came to the barn as Cotton was pouring out oats for the mules.
Daddy, I didn't finish. Those mules kept running away. I thought sure they'd wreck that old wagon.
I'd hope. Well, we can't help it now. We'll need everything to be ready for them folks when they come tomorrow afternoon. Your mother won't like it, but I reckon you'd best stay home from church and finish the job in the morning. You ain't so sinful that missing church one Sunday will condemn you to the fires.
Well, I'll stay and help Cotton. I don't think the Lord will miss me.
Miss you? If you showed up in church, the Lord would probably wonder who in hell you are.
I can handle it myself. I'd be through already, only those mules was...
I know you could do the job alone, but let Uncle Huey help you. It won't take you much longer. We'll give you all a chance to visit.
We got a lot to talk about.
Cotton said nothing, but his eyes indicated that he doubted it. A month earlier, it would have been too cold to sit out in the front yard and talk in the full moon's light. But the slight nip of the May night was invigorating after the heat of the afternoon. They'd carried chairs out from the kitchen and set them on the ground because there was no porch. A porch was often a luxury, added to a utilitarian frame house in this part of the country only when the family reached a modicum of financial security and the wolf no longer howled by the door. The breeze was light, barely enough to rustle the new leaves of the big chinaberry trees under which Huey rocked the straight-legged chair, flirting with a backward fall. Walter asked Huey about various people they'd known in years past, people he hoped Huey might have seen. Huey told him of those he had encountered, repeating and embellishing a little on any wild gossip he had heard. Tommy asked question after question about the towns Huey had visited, the wild cattle he had chased, the wild horses he'd ridden. Huey's answers were patterned to fit what he thought Tommy wanted to hear. The cows ran faster and the horses pitched harder than had ever been known by most mortal men.
What kind of clothes are women wearing in town these days?
Well, they was wearing dresses. If they hadn't been, I reckon I'd have noticed.
But what kind of dresses? What do they look like?
Well, they was of all colors and long enough to cover. That's about all I can tell you.
What about the hats?
Well, all the hats I seen were on top of their heads. Had feathers, some of them. Bird feathers.
Every so often, Huey glanced at the yellow glow of lamplight in the kitchen window. Cotton sat in there by himself, reading a book at the table. Huey kept thinking he would eventually come out in curiosity to hear the stories, but he didn't.
I didn't think to tell you, Huey, but old Snort Yarnell came by last summer, hoping to find you here.
Huey sat the chair down abruptly, smiling as 100 pleasant memories came flooding over him.
Old Snort? Oh, I wished I'd seen him. How'd he look?
Same as ever. Gets a little older along, and that's the only change.
Still wilder than a peach orchard boar, I expect. He sure is a good old boy.
Good for nothing, old boy. A tramp, a chuck line rider. I'll bet in his whole life he never did 3 honest days' work hard running.
But he knows how to enjoy life. That's more than most people do. Old Grady Welch used to run with him a lot. Was Grady with him?
Walter looked at the ground.
I don't reckon you heard. Grady Welch is dead. Horse throwed him off and stepped on him.
The moment of happy memories passed. Sadness pressed down on Huey.
You sure about that, Walter?
Snort was with him when it happened, out in the Davis Mountains. He helped bury him.
Oh, damn, but I hate to hear it.
It gets them all if they stay out there and court it long enough. That's why I wish you'd find a place and settle down, Huey.
Huey didn't answer. At length, he looked at his sister-in-law.
Eve, you still got some coffee on the stove?
Yes, I'll go get you a cup.
No. You stay where you're at. I'll fetch it.
Huey walked into the kitchen and stopped to look at Cotton, sitting at the plain pine table, the lamplight falling on an open book. Cotton nodded, but said nothing.
I've done a right smart of reading myself. You get lots of time for it in a batching camp. Have you read Ivanhoe yet?
Cotton shook his head.
It's got lots of good fighting and killing in it. You'd enjoy it.
He received no response. Huey stepped closer, trying to read over Cotton's shoulder.
What's that you're so interested in?
The theory of internal combustion.
What are you going to bust?
Internal combustion is what makes automobiles run.
Do you understand that stuff?
Cotton didn't look up from the book.
No, but I'd like to.
Huey poured an enameled cup full of coffee. He stalled a little, hoping Cotton would volunteer to say something, but Cotton kept reading. Huey went back outside, sat down in his chair, and rocked it faster than before.
I've been thinking about old Homer Gans up in the territory and some of the wild stunts he used to pull. He was a lot like Snortin' Grady. And you. I don't reckon you came across him by some accident.
Huey slowed the chair and warmed the conversation.
Not by accident. I made it a point to go and stay with him a couple of weeks last year. Salty as he ever was, ain't changed a particle. Only his hair is thinner and he's short a couple of front teeth. Well, and he's got a stiff leg where a horse rolled on him. Getting a shade fat, too. Ain't changed a bit. You'd know him a mile off.
Huey launched into a story, only modestly exaggerated, about their riding into a territory town with a string of Homer's green-broken ponies to trade to the Indians. They got into a horse race bet and lost all the ponies, but had such an uproarious celebration with the Indians that it seemed cheap at the price. Eve was incredulous. She had heard plenty of Huey's stories, but this one was outrageous enough to be true.
You're telling us that he threw away a whole year's work, just like that, on one horse race?
He didn't throw it away. He bet it. He'll have another string of ponies to sell this year. And you ought to have seen that horse race. Why, if only you'd been there...
He described it with all its thrills and spills, adding two or three to bring them up to even measure.
I swear, Huey, that sounds just like you and old Homer. I wished I could have been there.
I wish you could have been there, too. Walter, you're going to have to take yourself a vacation off of this place and go on a trip with me one of these days. It'll do you a world of good.
I know it would. I'm just liable to do it.
Eve cut a sharp glance at her husband and then back at Huey.
Walter, we've got a long day ahead of us. I think it's high time we all went to bed.
Cotton hadn't said three words since he and Huey hitched the half-broken mules in the first light of a cool dawn and headed out over the hill for the recently acquired French place. In the bed of the wagon rattled the carpentry and digging tools Cotton judged he would need to complete restoration of the windmill and have everything ready for the raising. Also carried were heavy wrenches and grips, well ropes, block and tackle. Windmilling was not a horseman's type of work. Daylight and the fresh dampness of the May morning had brought the cattle out to graze. They were gentle, a far cry from the twistified cattle Huey was used to. They paid only momentary attention to the creaking wagon. The calf approached in curiosity, then turned tail and ran back to its mother as a wheel dropped into a hole and made everything in the wagon bed clatter and protest. Huey tried to bait Cotton into conversation, but had only sporadic and short-lived success. He pointed to a motley-faced cow whose horns were beginning to show through circles at their base, an indication that she was moving past what might charitably be termed middle age.
I remember that old sister. She was in the bunch I brought out for your daddy from over on the Concho.
Cotton only nodded.
I remember she had a good heifer calf, kind of a roan with a white face. She's still in the herd?
Cotton made the longest speech Huey had drawn out of him all morning.
We still got her.
She raise a calf every year?
Cotton nodded. Huey could see he was losing ground. Cotton kept his gaze on the dim trail of wheel-crushed dry grass from last year. The new green grass was attempting to heal it over. Huey gave up a while and studied the open, rolling country. It wasn't the best grassland he'd ever seen by a long way, but he knew it was deceptive. Here, just to the east of the Pecos River, the land seemed to suffer for rain more often than not, and grass tended to be of the short varieties, not the tall, thick growth that dominated farther east in Texas or up in the Indian nations, especially the Osage. But this was strong grass. In a hard year, a cow might walk herself half to death trying to find enough to fill her belly, but what she found was well supplied with minerals and nutrients. If she never got fat, at least she stayed hardy. Back east, he had seen cows starve with tall, weak grass tickling their bellies. Farming now was a different game of poker. They ought not to allow a plow within 100 miles of here, he thought, unless it was passing through on a freight train with the doors sealed. He had heard it said that when a man traveled west in Texas, he lost an inch of average annual rainfall for every 50 miles. If this figure was correct, he could be in the red by the time he made El Paso. It seemed to Huey that God had already put this country to its proper use without anybody's help. Grass was what it raised best, and it ought to be left that way. But this was not a popular time to be expressing such a sentiment. In fashionable circles, it was considered non-progressive, the outmoded defense of the old line free-range cattlemen like C.C. Tarpley, who didn't want to give up private possession of land that rightfully belonged to all the citizens of Texas. Anyone who spoke such a sentiment was allying himself with the forces of monopoly and greed, the reformers shouted. He was setting himself against progress and the uplifting of the common man. He was to be shunned by all good Christian soldiers dedicated to God's work. Huey had already seen many of God's good common men starve off of the plow and desert the land they had broken out in his name. The dried fields would scour and blow away in the hot west wind, leaving a sore that wouldn't heal in 100 years.
You ought never to plow it.
Cotton was caught off balance, his thoughts elsewhere.
Huh? Oh, sorry, that just sort of slipped out. I was thinking of the homestead law. I just say it's wrong to make a man plow out of the field to hold his claim. He ought not to rip up land that God has already planted to grass and handed to him as a gift.
Cotton's shell seemed to crack a little.
You better not say that where Mama can hear it.
Well, there's a lot she don't agree with me about.
She says leaving good land and grass is slothful, that the Lord wants us to cultivate it and make it blossom like the rose.
Yeah, well, lots of people talk about what the Lord wants. Wonder how many has ever asked.
You could have asked him yourself if you'd gone to church with the rest of them this morning.
I don't have to go to church to hunt for him. I see him around here every day, everywhere I look.
Cotton studied his uncle with a growing interest.
That sounds like pantheism, like the preacher's always warning us about.
That's something like the Catholics.
It must be pretty bad, because the preacher is sure down on it.
The only religion I ever had was the same as yours. I was ducked for a Baptist, but the water didn't soak very deep. I'm taking up my old and willful ways again pretty soon.
Some church going might be good for you then.
Yeah, I always liked God better when I found him outdoors. He always seemed too big to fit into a little bitty cramped up church house.
Cotton fell silent again. Huey changed the subject, talking about things he understood far better than religion. But he seemed unable to draw Cotton far out of that protective shell. He tried to make it appear he was watching the country, while his eyes kept cutting back to Cotton.
We used to understand each other pretty good.
I've got a little older, Uncle Huey.
Well, so have I.
On you, it don't ever seem to make any difference.
Huey felt a cutting edge in Cotton's voice, a reproach he couldn't understand.
Button, if I've said something that hurt you...
The boy shrugged and turned his attention back to the bronc mules.
It's been a long time. You probably forgot about what you said as soon as you were done saying it. There's no use poking over dead ashes.
Huey rubbed his left hand over a knocked-down knuckle on his right hand, a relic of a bad day of bronc stomping that netted him no more than a dollar at best.
Button, I never said a cross word to you in all your life. I've never raised my voice at you.
And never lied to me?
Huey kept rubbing the hand. It didn't pain him, but somehow he wished it did, as if pain might in some way compensate for whatever hurt he'd caused his nephew.
I've never lied to you. Well, never anything serious. Oh, I might have stretched the truth a time or two telling you stories, but never anything to hurt you or lead you wrong. I've never meant you anything but good.
You made me a promise once, but I expect you turned right around and forgot it. You sure as hell never kept it.
It jarred Huey a little, hearing Cotton use a word like hell. Sure, Huey used it himself, but he was 38 years old. Times were changing, it looked like.
I reckon I'm guilty since you say so, but I sure don't remember any promise I never kept.
You knew how bad I wanted to see a real automobile. You promised me you was going to take me someplace where they had them. And you was even going to fix it up to get me a ride in one. Then one morning I woke up and you had left.
Huey didn't remember.
Anytime I ever made you a promise, Button, I intended to keep it. But, well, sometimes things come up.
Things always come up with you.
He didn't see any gain in telling Cotton of the sharp scolding Eve gave him about his bad influence on the boys. So far as he knew, even Walter never learned about that.
I didn't go to hurt you.
You told me you had seen a bunch of automobiles in Midland. After you left and didn't take me yourself, I made my mind up to go anyway. Went over there with Blue Hannigan's wagons. There wasn't an automobile in that town, Uncle Huey. Not one. Folks said they hardly ever saw one come through.
Well, I don't know why you're so dead set on seeing one of them devil cars. I've seen a many of them, and there ain't nothing to them. They smell like a sick skunk. They cause folks so much grief that I don't see how they can hold out much longer. As soon as the last one has run off into a ditch, that'll be the end of the automobile. You ain't really missed very much.
You're wrong, Uncle Huey. They ain't hardly gotten started yet. Pretty soon you'll be seeing people driving 100 or 150 miles in a single day. Show me the horse that can do that.
There ain't any real call for it. I've never been in a place I hated so much that I had to get 100 miles from it in one day.
You ever ridden in an automobile?
Huey hadn't. Another time he might have made up a story, but he sensed that this was a time for being truthful. Anyway, his experience was too limited to feed his imagination much. The noise and the smoke always discouraged him from getting very close to one when its motor was running. He felt sure it was going to explode any minute.
Midland ain't that much of a town anyway. One of these days I'll take you with me and we'll make us a trip to some big place like San Angelo or maybe even Fort Worth. I'll bet you'll see lots of automobiles here. I might even take you for a ride in one.
Cotton's eyes narrowed again.
Maybe you ought to save back your promises for Tommy. He's still young enough to believe anything.
Huey frowned, studying his nephew. He had never noticed before how much Cotton looked like his mother. The windmill appeared almost ready to raise. The tail section lay on the ground as yet unattached, but the big cypress wheel was mounted to the 30-foot wooden tower. The top was propped up off of the ground by a rough but strong sawhorse fashioned from heavy mesquite limbs. The wheel and the tail had originally been red, but many pieces had been replaced by new lumber, painstakingly sawed and trimmed to fit.
You know, we ought to paint it before we raise it up.
It's cypress. It'll stand the weather.
But it looks bad. Some painted, some raw that way. Looks like a farmer outfit.
That's what this is.
Huey would never have admitted it.
A windmill stands way up there and people can see it from a long ways off. A man ought to dress it up, same as he dresses himself up to go to church.
This is a long ways from church.
Not from mine.
Huey looked across the horizon and pointed to a distant tower.
Even old CC takes pride in the looks of his windmills. You'll notice they're painted, every one.
C.C. Tarpley's got money in the bank. In fact, he's got the bank. All we have down there is a big note coming due early in the fall. I reckon the folks will buy paint when they burn the note.
Cotton jumped down and began unhitching the team so they couldn't spook and run off with the loaded wagon. Huey tried to help him, but found Cotton aggressively self-sufficient. Huey began unloading the tools from the wagon instead.
I'll help you with that tail section. We'll have this thing fixed up before you know it.
I can get it. I'd figured on coming by myself anyway.
Perhaps Cotton saw the disappointment Huey tried not to show.
I reckon you can dig the holes for a pair of brace posts that we'll need to keep the tower from slipping when we commence to raising it. I've already staked the places.
Digging holes had never been Huey's favorite part of the cowboy trade, but neither was windmilling in general. He liked windmills for drinking cool water from, not for greasing or repairing. But he guessed digging holes was better than being shut out altogether. He dragged the post hole diggers from the splintered bed of the wagon. He grimaced, gripping the slick handles. It was not his habit to carry gloves. He knew he'd worked blisters on his hands before the morning was out. Well, it probably wasn't any worse than forking hay to cows in the Sangre de Cristo's snow. At least here, he wouldn't take a chill. The hole had been drilled by a professional windmill man, and the big steel casing extended above the level of the ground. Centered within the casing and standing a little higher was a 3-inch pipe through which the strokes of the wheel high above would draw the water. A set of heavy wooden blocks or collars rested on top of the outer casing and tightly gripped the smaller inside pipe to keep it from slipping down to the bottom of the hole. The tower, when raised, would be centered above the pipe. Huey took it for granted that Cotton hadn't overlooked a thing. It was in his nature to be thorough about mechanical devices. The well seemed to be in a slight depression.
Would have been handier to have had it drilled on higher ground. You could have gotten better gravity flow to your tank without raising the pipe so high.
Daddy let Julio Valdez witch the well. He said this is where the water was. Said it would be sweet water. So this is where Daddy had the hole drilled.
I take it you don't believe in water witching.
I've read everything I can find about science. I've never seen anything that said a man could walk around with a forked stick in his hand and tell you what's 50 feet under the ground.
You did get water.
I don't know if it's sweet.
Huey had never read much about science. He was satisfied that the world by '06 had already progressed about as far as it needed to go. People had already invented just about everything that the public could afford to buy. To him, water witching was a science. He'd never had the gift himself, but he had watched other people do it, and he had seen the end of a forked peach switch turn downward as surely as if some unseen hand had forced it. He supposed if Cotton had read it in a book, he would believe it. Huey kicked one of the stakes aside and vigorously attacked the ground with the diggers. After a few inches, the ground seemed to counterattack. Presently, he looked at his palms and saw small red spots rising. These would turn to blisters by and by and probably break open.
My hands never was made to fit the handles of these idiot sticks.
Cotton glanced up from a heavy bolt he was tightening.
I had figured on digging the holes myself. Go sit in the shade if you've a mind to.
There was no shade, unless Huey were to get under the wagon. Once this had been a cattle-watering place for a few years, the tank would probably become surrounded by a growth of mesquite trees, sprouting from the manure. But as yet, the nearby prairie was innocent of plants taller than a broom weed.
I wasn't complaining, just making conversation.
He went back to digging and didn't stop again until he saw that Cotton needed help lifting the tail section into place. Huey held it firmly while Cotton bolted it. He welcomed the respite, even for a bit of heavy lifting. He studied the intricate combination of wood and machinery that made up the mill's wheel section. It was 14 feet in diameter.
You must have had to rebuild the bigger part of this. Did you do it all by yourself?
It got damaged pretty bad when the wind blew the tower over. Old Arm Brewster didn't have it anchored good. Otherwise, Daddy couldn't have bought it in the first place. There's not much to it when you know how. Just a couple of days' work with the forge and the anvil and a saw.
Huey couldn't have done it. He would bet Walter couldn't either. Well, everybody do his own way of getting a backache. Huey's was horses. By the time he finished the second hole, his hands burned from two blisters that had sprouted and broken against the wooden handles. He said nothing because sympathy wouldn't help against the fire, and he reasoned that he'd get none from Cotton anyway. He glanced up toward the sun.
Don't you reckon it's time we start thinking about fixing us a bite to eat?
Several paces beyond the windmill was a shallow fire pit that Cotton had used on other days. Huey gathered up dry mesquite that Cotton or the well driller brought here, and some scrap pieces of kindling left over from the windmill repairing. He placed them in the pit and built a small fire. While the wood was working its way toward a strong red glow, he poured a generous measure of ground coffee into a fire-blackened bucket and then filled the bucket nearly to the top with water out of a wooden keg in the wagon bed.
Hell of a note. Got us a brand new well and we hauled drinking water from the house.
He stirred no response from Cotton. Huey poked the burning wood into shape and then set the bucket on top of it. He knew a watched pot would never boil, but he watched it anyway to be sure the burning sticks didn't collapse and tip the bucket over. Other than mumbling quietly to himself when something didn't seem to fit or a nut didn't want to take hold of a thread, Cotton said little all morning. Huey started 3 or 4 times to tell him of adventures, but Cotton betrayed no interest. Several good stories were stillborn. Huey would have to save them for Tommy, he supposed, if he could remember them. When Huey thought the coffee had boiled long enough, he used a forked stick to lift the bucket by its bail and set it back from the fire. From the wagon, he fetched a cotton sack Eve partially filled with cold biscuits and strips of bacon fried at breakfast.
Chuck, it ain't much, but it'll hold till the chicken.
Cotton's hands were hopelessly greasy from handling the working parts of the mill. He rubbed all he could onto an old gunny sack while Huey poured coffee in 2 bent and tarnished tin cups. Cotton's hands were still black.
Little honest dirt ain't gonna ruin a man's digestion. I reckon I've eaten a ton of it, one time and another.
Cotton broke a biscuit and folded a couple of strips of bacon inside, then closed the biscuit and mashed it down. While he ate, his gaze remained fastened to the mill. Huey could see pride in his eyes. As Cotton finished the first biscuit, Huey fixed him another with 3 strips of bacon.
Eat up. You've done good.
Cotton's enthusiasm got the better of his reserve.
It's gonna work just fine, Uncle Huey. It's gonna be as good as a brand new one.
Better, I bet. People that work in them factories, they don't take care like the man who's gonna use it. They just throw it together and slap it in the crate, and they know that's the last they'll see of it.
I'd like to work in one of those factories a while. Not making windmills, maybe, but making engines, or maybe even automobiles. Something that runs and has a life of its own.
And be cooped up inside a building with all that smoke and all that noise? I couldn't stay in there for 30 minutes.
It's what's coming, Uncle Huey.
I sure hope not.
They're even talking about building flying machines. Speed is what everybody wants today.
In a horse, yes. A good old cow pony can give a man all the speed he ever needs. I've had some give me a right smart more than I wanted.
I don't expect Mama and Daddy to understand. They're living in the past, and happy enough with it. But you've always been the restless one, Uncle Huey. You've always been the one who wanted to see something new and try what other people hadn't already done. I think you'd be excited over what's happening around us today.
Huey sipped carefully on the hot coffee.
Well, sure, I always liked to see new country, new people. But everywhere I went, I used to feel like I could deal with whatever came up. It was me against a horse, or me against a bunch of cattle, or maybe me against another man. I knew how to take a hold. But now, lots of places, it's different. I've been to some big towns. I've seen them automobiles chugging up and down, scaring hell out of the horses, leaving a trail of smoke that'd choke a bay mule. I've seen a man sit down at a telephone in Fort Worth, Texas, and talk to somebody way off at the Kansas City stockyards just like he was in the next room. I've seen streets so strung up with wires that you couldn't see the sky through, hardly. I don't understand it. I can't take a hold of it. Scares me so bad, I can't hardly wait to saddle up and get back into the open country where you've got to look a man in the face to talk to him.
It ought to excite you, Uncle Huey.
Might excite you, but it scares me.
He nodded toward the reclining Eclipse.
That windmill there, that's as complicated a piece of machinery as ever I want to fool with.
The world's moving faster all the time. You either go on with it or you get left behind. You never was one to get left behind.
Yeah, because I always looked forward to the place I was going to. But I don't look forward to this world you're talking about.
Well, I'm going to be part of it. I want to help build it.
Well, I hope you like it when you get it finished.
He hated to get to his feet. He'd finally broken Cotton out of his silence. Maybe from now on things would go a little easier between them. He flung the dregs of his coffee into the greening grass and pitched his cup into the wagon bed. Cotton stood up and looked toward home.
We'll have it ready for them pretty soon. They can come any time they take the notion.
Huey rubbed his hands. They hurt a little. Bacon grease would probably help in the long run, but its saltiness brought the fire back.
Don't take a lot of people to raise a windmill.
The raising's just an excuse for everybody to come and visit and enjoy themselves. First chance we've had since spring came.
Huey walked to the prone tower and slapped a hand against one of the 6x6 legs.
What say me and you raise this mill ourselves? When they get here, they won't have anything to do but party.
Cotton's mouth dropped open.
You don't mean that.
Way to give them a dandy surprise.
It might give us one. Just us two and a pair of bronc mules. If the least thing went wrong, we'd wreck the windmill. We'd have all this work to do over again.
Ah, the odds are with us.
Cotton stared at him with exasperation. There was finality in his voice, the way Huey had often heard it from Eve.
They're right about you, Uncle Huey.
How's that?
They say you've got no more responsibility than a one-eyed jackrabbit. You won't ever grow up, you'll just grow old, if you live.
Well, no harm meant, just a notion I had was all.
Cotton said nothing more as he worked his way around the mill, checking the bolts for tightness, fondling it as if it were a pet he'd just saved from harm.
That's always the way with me. Take one step forward and two backward. Almost had him there for a little bit.
He took out his frustration on the post-hole digger, throwing it into the wagon bed. Huey noticed a lone rider approaching, moving in a sensible slow trot, not pushing his horse. He squinted, trying to identify him. Cotton only glanced, then went back to his work, evidently satisfied that this was the vanguard of the tower-raising crew.
I believe that's Wes Wheeler. He's still sheriff here?
Cotton took a fresh look.
Well, that's him, and he is. I didn't know he was interested in raising windmills.
Huey had usually been able to recognize law officers about as far as he could see them. They had an intangible manner of standing, of walking, of riding, an official presence that gave them away. Huey instinctively always classified them as one of two types, usually on first sight. Good ones and bad ones. He rarely altered his initial opinion. Wes Wheeler was one he had always put in the good category. He didn't go around arbitrarily telling people what to do or trying to run their lives with the excuse that it was for their own good. He recognized that his main function was to keep the peace, and he seldom raised much hell in doing it. He never bothered a man unless he was convinced that a little bothering was going to benefit the community. Wheeler was a big man who needed a big horse. This one was a stocky dun, still shedding off the coarse winter hair. Wheeler dismounted, keeping his horse between himself and Huey. That struck Huey as being a little odd. He decided it was an old habit, a holdover from rougher days when a lawman occasionally needed a shield. Wheeler had cut his eye teeth in times like that. They had left their mark on him. Wheeler came on afoot, leading the dun horse. Huey walked out to meet him, and they shook hands firmly.
Hey, good to see you, Wes.
Heard at church that you was back.
Yeah, I got here last evening. Sorry I missed church.
Guess it won't hurt you to miss it once in a while. Good job on that windmill, Cotton. Looks better than new.
The sheriff's eyes kept shifting back to Huey.
Hearing you was back got me to thinking about an odd letter I got in yesterday's mail. You have any trouble on the way home, Huey?
Huey shook his head.
Well, Biscuit acted like he was fixing to come up lame is all.
Now, that ain't the kind of trouble I mean. You didn't by any chance have some difficulty with a city marshal back up the way?
Oh, that? It wasn't no trouble, really. We just had a little difference of opinion. It was over in a minute.
The sheriff's eyes turned sad.
I got a letter yesterday from the sheriff up there. I imagine he wrote to every sheriff in this part of the country.
Huey shook his head.
It just happened a few days ago, and you already got a letter about it? The U.S. mails are a wonder to behold.
Seems like by this letter that they're looking for a cowboy by the name of Hugh Holloway.
That marshal never did get my name right.
They got this Holloway charged with attempted murder.
Cotton set down his wrench and stood listening, eyes and mouth wide open.
Well, that's laying it on mighty thick. I didn't try to murder him. I didn't even hit him, hardly. Just a little tap on the nose to keep him from pistol-whipping me again. It was a big nose. I couldn't hardly miss. Maybe Biscuit stepped on him, too. Things was a little confused there.
The sheriff walked over to the remnants of the fire and looked in the coffee bucket. He was disappointed to find it empty.
We got the makings. We'll fix you another pot.
I reckon you better tell me all about it, Huey.
Huey told him what little there was, about the marshal shouting at him for riding down a residential street, and about him trying to hit Huey up beside the head with a six-shooter that must have weighed 37 pounds.
Letter says you taken the gun away from him, and that you ought to be considered armed and dangerous.
If they ever clean out the water trough down there by the railroad tracks, they'll find that pistol. I throwed it away the first chance I got. I was figured one way to never need a gun was to never carry one around.
The sheriff's eyes were half closed, but he was a long way from being asleep.
You sure you told me everything, Huey?
Well, it didn't amount to nothing, hardly.
Wheeler critically studied the mark on Huey's jaw.
He done that to you just for riding on the wrong street?
Yeah, he seemed like he was a little overwrought.
The man was probably descended from a long line of bachelors.
Cotton ventured closer to the two men.
Uncle Huey, you mean all he asked you to do was go over and ride on another street?
He didn't ask me to. He told me I had to. There's a difference.
If he'd asked you to, would you have done it?
Sure. I always try to get along with people.
I don't understand that at all.
Huey wasn't sure how to explain it. It seemed so natural that no explanation ought to be necessary.
I'm a free-born American. I haven't been to war. I'd be a taxpayer and proud to say it if I owned anything to pay taxes on. I'd got a right to ride down any street anywhere in this country that anybody else can. Somebody tells me I gotta get off, and I do it, pretty soon I won't have that right anymore.
Cotton wasn't satisfied. Huey didn't know how to satisfy him. Wes Wheeler saw Huey's chagrin. He looked at Cotton.
Son, I'm a peace officer. It's my job to enforce the law. I'm not allowed to make the law. That's for somebody else to do. If I go making it, I can make it anything I want it to be. First thing you know, I'll use it to help me and my friends. I'll use it to hurt people I don't like. If that ever happens, I'm dangerous. That marshal up yonder, he's gone way beyond his rightful authority. That makes him dangerous. You let people like that get away with it, pretty soon, they'll take you over.
Huey couldn't tell if the message got through to Cotton.
Mr. Wheeler, you gonna turn Uncle Huey over to him?
The sheriff's mouth twisted.
Letter said they're hunting for somebody named Hugh Holloway. I don't know any Hugh Holloway. It ain't my fault they got a marshal who can't remember names.
Wes looked at Huey.
You better hope some other sheriff don't figure out that they want Huey Calloway and tell them where to hunt.
I always try to get along good with the law.
If you ever go north again, you might better take a broad roundin's on new prosperity. Not because you have to, but because you want to.
I didn't lose nothing there.
If they ever come looking for you and have the name right, I don't know what I can do to help you.
You've already helped me, Wes. I appreciate you telling me.
Wheeler climbed back into his saddle.
They're fixing to have a big chicken supper over at the house this evening. I know Eve and Walter would consider you mighty welcome.
I can't stay, Huey. Might be a good idea if you got your visiting done and left pretty soon yourself, just in case.
He waved and he was gone.
Just change streets. That's all you'd have had to do. Just ride over one block.
Huey didn't know how to explain to him that a man could lose a lot of manhood in a single block. He didn't try.
Look, your mother wouldn't understand about this. I hope you don't feel like you've got to tell her.
No, she wouldn't. And I won't.